As a family, we've always owned some sort of small business, whether it's a restaurant or a little manufacturing company or distribution company. But we've always owned businesses. It's always been part of the culture of our family, is to kind of be our own boss. My dad bought a company called Hartco, turned it into Hartco. It wasn't called Hartco. We make linings in the football, for the inside of the footballs, for the NFL, NCAA, all the leather footballs made in the entire would have our lining. And he ran it and through 1996. And so we just worked a little bit of transition to the point where in 2000, I bought it from him. But it was just about bankrupt. It was pretty much in the hole. And we had considerable amount of debt. I would say that my mindset was to run a business, make money, you know, do well, all those kind of things. So I spent a lot of time, you know, studying lean manufacturing, Six Sigma, ISO, all that kind of stuff. And from that moment to now, we've retired almost all of the debt, and at the same time, still given away huge portions of our profits in the same period of time. We've actually retired less debt than we've given away. We believe that whatever money comes in, we pray over it, we decide what we're gonna do with it, and we give a very large portion, over 50% of all that we earn, back out. And we do that to build the kingdom, what we believe is building the kingdom of God. From all the things that we've done, you know, we generate a result that's greater than what we can really measure in dollars and cents. So, you know, we're four times as profitable as anybody in our industry. We're five times as productive as anybody in our industry. You know, our employees, when they come, they don't go anywhere. They stay. They love being a part of what we do. And I think it's because there's a bigger picture. There's more to the business than just making money. The money is kind of a secondary, it's kind of a means to an end. We're really more focused on the relationships and on the spiritual growth and maturity that we can develop in the people that work there and then the people that we impact outside of Hartco. And over the years, I went from thinking that I owned Hartco, was my own boss, to being more of a steward of Hartco. I just simply feel like when I read the Word of God and I look at all the things that He gives, you know, it's really all His. It's just not mine. And I'm blessed to get to touch it and to have a part of what He's doing in the world, because He doesn't have to let me be a part of it. He doesn't need me, but He lets me be a part of it. How God's kind of set it out is He said, hey, look, Chris, this is the mission for Hartco. And it's not really what I would do. Really, I probably would maybe do something different than what I do with the money, but I know that's what He wants. So I'll get three or four people together and we'll pray over each of the ministries that we are looking at or each of the people that we're looking at. And we just kind of ask God, what do You want us to do with this money? And He's real clear. He says, do it this or do that. And that's been kind of cool to see people within the organization get excited about giving. And they know that we give this money away. And so when they're working, they also know that what they're doing in their work is more than just making a football panel or making the sole of a cleaner garment, but they're actually building in the kingdom. And they get excited about that. Even some of the folks that maybe aren't like deep into church, they still like doing good things with their money. And so it's become part of our business culture. And so whether it's the assets or the profits, or the building, or the people that are within it, they're all really pretty much on loan to me. And God calls me to give Him as good a return as is humanly possible for me, and then He does infinitely more than that. Part of being a steward is if it's God's money, that He would want the people that I get to work with every day to be taken care of the way He would take care of them. So we do things that are very much outside the box for people, because that's what I think God does for us a lot. He does a lot of stuff outside the box. We spend a lot of time making sure that our employees have the benefits that they need. So we cover 100% of all of their medical benefits and stuff like that. We have short-term, long-term disability. We have what we call the Manna Foundation, which is a scholarship program that is only for the Hartco employees. Doesn't include my family, but just the employees. And it covers 100% of their kids' college. We know what's going on in their personal finances and help them work through that, help them with their budgets and, you know, loans that they're trying to get to buy houses, and just in general, we're just involved in their lives on a regular basis. So one of the things that we do that's, I think, a backbone of our business is that we have Bible study every day. And we don't do that off the clock, we actually do it on the clock. So the employees can come and they can sit on the clock and hear whatever it is that we're teaching, or a Crossroads video, or whatever it might be that we're playing. They have the opportunity to hear the word. And Right now, pretty much everybody comes. Every once in a while, somebody sleeps in and misses. But for the most part, everybody's there every day. And there's been a lot of growth from that, been a lot of change in people's lives. So even though they have a job to do and they're highly skilled at it, that's not the most important part of why they're at HeartCo. I do feel like God blesses beyond our abilities and capabilities. I do definitely believe that. And so I think the fact that we're able to accomplish as much as we do is because we are on mission. I think when you look at a business, there's lots of assets in the business. And one of those is cash. We're able to generate cash, we're able to be profitable. But the cash is not all that valuable when you trade it in for something like relationships and you trade it in for something like spiritual growth and spiritual awakening in people. And so this over here is a great asset or a great thing to have, but these things over here that we're trading it for is much, much better and much more exciting and much more what I feel called to do.
How awesome is that? Awesome. 50% profits given away, full coverage, college, yada, yada. And you know, you don't have to do that if you have a business or how you manage it. You don't have to do that. All I love about that is this. There is a different way to do things if you choose to. There is a different way. And by default, few of us think critically about our financial patterns. Few of us think critically about what we want to have happen and do something different that even somebody smart might tell us is dumb. Awesomeness. Today we're going to continue to dig into this idea of what would it be like to actually have our lives produce a return on investment. So let's pray before I go any further. God, thank you for inspiring people like Chris, who do inspire and do challenge. And I thank you that, that man is exactly who he seems to be on video. I'm thankful that I know him and that there's somebody like him in the world and in my life. I thank you for the opportunity to talk about the things I'm going to talk about today, and I pray that they would be helpful and inspiring and challenging. Amen. Well, whenever I communicate, whether it's here at Crossroads on this stage or if I'm asked to speak someplace else or whatever, what I do every single time is I ask myself, what is the main thing? What's the main thing I want people to know? And what's the main thing I want people to do? Now, I never tell you that up front. Otherwise, you'd know where I'm trying to take you, and you go, I'm not going to go there. So, but today, I'm going to tell you. I'm going to tell you my main thing is today. My main thing today is I want to get you this week to do a beans and rice fast for 1 week. That's my main thing. Everything I do is about that. Actually, you're going to leave here today, and you're going to get a starter kit. You're going to get a beans and rice starter kit. And what this will do is this will start you off to identify with billions of people in the world's population who live on this, only this, every day, all day for their entire lives. Billions of people on the planet. So the reason we're doing this, and you can choose to do this for 2 days, 1 day, 7 days, 2 meals out of 3, you know, all kinds of grace for you to figure out what works for you. But the idea is to say, if this costs, I don't know what this costs, 20 cents, and my trip to McDonald's costs $77, then we're going to take the difference, $6.80, and we're going to give it outside of ourselves to other organizations I'm going to tell you about in a moment. Or you eat this instead of going to NADA on a date night and spending $87. $87 minus 20 cents is $86.80 or whatever. So you'll do that as the time goes on, and you'll either do it immediately electronically to get it out of your hair, or you'll pull all that money and bring it back here next week. Now, here's why we're doing this. Three awesome things I'm excited to invest in. Number one, we have a blue chip investment opportunity for us. It's called Compassion International. It's my favorite charity outside of Crossroads. Our family has done this for 2 decades. You can get to sponsor a child who gets their basic educational needs met and their basic meal needs met. And what happens, people sign up, and it's, I think, $38 a month, and you get to a little pen pal relationship with a kid. It's all good. But what happens, people sign up, all the intentions, and then they stop. They don't fulfill their commitment, or they don't start. And what happens when that happens? Child has his heart broken. It's like this is a bank that says, oh, we'll just borrow some money here and pick up this person's lost commitment. No, there's kids who have their hearts broken and are hungry because other people didn't fulfill it. So we are going to step in the gap and pick that kid back up and get him going the right direction, because we are going to do this week. It's going to be awesome. Awesome. We've already worked it out with the high muckety mucks at Compassion International. It's going to be awesome. Then we have an immediate return investment right here in our city. we can debate about why the city budget is the way it is, well, they should do this different, they should do that different. The fact of the matter is, there's difficult budget decisions every year in our city, and one of the decisions that we made again this year is that key pools around our city will be shut down on the weekends. So a time when a family could bond, that's when dads, moms aren't working generally, on the weekend to bond with their family, at a pool they can't do because it's shut down. So we're going to keep open as many pools as we can all over our city this summer. What that does, that invests in a family that's bonding, that couldn't bond in front of a television or couldn't bond because they don't have a private membership to a pool or something like that. It's an honest investment in the health of families and kids in our city. And then the third and final thing we're going to do is we're going to have an investment that's a long-term investment. When experts are looking at what are the contributing factors that causes somebody to be in poverty, they're narrowing it down to the key lever. The key lever is preschool. Preschool. Whether or not you're a child who gets a preschool experience is the single biggest indicator of whether or not you will have a life of poverty. Because what happens is you don't get to preschool, you don't get learning as well as other kids do, you fall behind in your reading, you fall behind in your reading, you're gonna fall behind in your grades as time goes on, you fall behind in your grades, you're gonna have a worse attitude about education, you have a bad attitude about education, you're not gonna finish, you have a bad attitude, you're not gonna get a job, it is the way it goes. And so we're gonna work with the Strive Foundation here in our city, work with them, and we're going to scholarship as many kids as we possibly can going through preschool and getting them started. In fact, what they've said working with us is that Crossroads has become a preferred, if you will, almost angel investor, to where our capital in the city and the world has grown such that people trust us if we're jumping in and believe that the job's going to get done. And so what they've told us is that our tens of thousands of dollar investment will result in millions of additional funding that will come in because we've jumped in on this. Folks, are you kidding me? Are you kidding me? We don't have to do this. We get to do this. We get to do this. Now, here's my content for why I want to try to motivate us to do this week. I've been watching on Sunday nights with my family. It's been a pretty interesting show, the Bible thing on the History Channel. I don't know if you've been watching it. I've actually enjoyed it. The cheese factor is relatively small, and the special effects aren't quite as good as you would get with a top-tier Hollywood production, but I tell you what, it's really, I've really, really enjoyed it. And I've watched really closely to see if my favorite stories are in there. And most of the time, my favorite stories aren't in those video productions, because Hollywood always goes for the, you know, the cool, like, wow factor stories, which are fine, they're in there. But the ones that have the sort of character formation are the ones that I'm mostly drawn to. And one of my favorite stories in the Bible I've never seen in a production of the Bible, whether it's on History Channel or old-fashioned Charlton Heston or something else, follows two of the crazy miracles that are always produced in media. The first one is Passover. Today, Jews are celebrating Passover. It's a Holy Week situation for them, which was the final miracle that God did to bring the nation of Israel out of slavery. He went to Pharaoh and said, if you don't let my people go, bad stuff's going to happen, miracle after miracle after miracle. Finally, the last one, the angel of death, the angel of the Lord, actually, we call it now the angel of death, it's God. He goes in and he cruises through land, and wherever there is not blood of the lamb above the posts of the door, the angel of death will pass over the blood of the lamb that's over the posts, and wherever there's a household that doesn't have blood, he goes in and he kills the firstborn son. And the nation of Israel get passed over because they have the blood of the lamb over their doorposts. Crazy. It was in the thing. It was a wild miracle. And so they celebrate how God delivered them, and that led the nation of Egypt to allow Israel to go back to freedom. And then, of course, the next big thing happens is Moses takes his staff and the Red Sea parts, and they go through. That's always on video. But the next part never is. That's the coolest part for me. It's a 40-year-long journey where the nation of Israel simply has to survive. They have to sustain themselves. Exodus chapter 16, verse 15 says this. When the people of Israel saw it, they said to one another, "What is it?" For they did not know what it was. And Moses said to them, "It is the bread that the Lord has given you to eat." Have you ever heard of the idea of bread from heaven? It comes back to this story. Nation of Israel, they've left possessions and stuff. They don't have an economy to keep them going. They're wandering around in the wilderness. And how are they going to sustain themselves? So every day, The first day, especially, they come out of their tents, and there's this flaky substance that's all over the ground. And they go, what is it? What? And actually, what that means in Hebrew is manna. Whenever you hear manna, manna means, what is it? That's literally what it means. And they would have just enough crusty, flaky stuff on the ground. They would come down, they'd break it up, they'd gather, they'd eat it all day, they'd store it. Overnight, it would rot, so they couldn't have any savings. And then the next morning, they'd get out of their tent, oh my goodness, it's here again! Awesomeness! And they'd eat like that for 40 years. 40 years, depending on God to meet their basic needs. There are times when you in your life will go through two times, times of sustenance and times of abundance. Let's talk about sustenance. Times of sustenance is when you have just enough to make it to the next day, just enough to make it to the next paycheck, just enough to get to where you need to go for pure basic survival. And the nation of Israel went through this time of sustenance. You can be in a time of sustenance and God not be punishing you. You can be a time of sustenance and it not be due to you being a dumb person. All of us, well, most of us will go or have gone through a time of sustenance. Exodus chapter 16, verse 31 continues. Now, the house of Israel called its name manna. It was like coriander seed, white, and the taste of it was like wafers made with honey. And Moses said, this is what the Lord has commanded. Let an omer of it be kept throughout your generations so that they may see the bread with which I fed you in the wilderness when I brought you out of the land of Egypt. He says, remember it. You're going to be able to keep a little container as a memorial for how I sustained you. All of us have probably been through some sustenance. Some of us in here perhaps are right now. The film family, for the most part right now, is in abundance. There's things that we don't have that we could have because of our giving. But for the most part, if I want to experience something, I can generally figure out how to experience it. I'm never worrying about whether or not I'm going to go hungry right now. I'm never worrying about whether or not we can afford the 10-pack roll at Sam's Club, you know, for toilet paper. Awesome. You can buy 10 packs of toilet paper at the same time. God bless America. Man, you've got to love that. But I remember, when Libby and I remember, we were first married. We couldn't buy the 2-pack. We didn't have enough money for the 2-pack. We had to just do 1 pack at a time and not take advantage of the buying power. We remember finding out that we were pregnant. My goodness, how did that happen? It was Lib's fault, all her fault. I mean, she couldn't resist me. I mean, I can't blame her necessarily. I mean, look at that right there, you know. Pregnant, no health insurance. Oh my goodness. So people start telling us about prenatal vitamins. Prenatal vitamin? What the heck is a prenatal vitamin? Well, you got to do that so your kid develops. We don't have enough money for, you know, one-a-day vitamins for a human being we can see. We're supposed to buy vitamins for some human being in here. We go, what? We start just getting stressed out. We go to some doctor, and he looks at us. I don't know how this is going to work. We find out that they have at the hospital charity care. Charity care. It didn't sound very good, but I'll tell you what. Charity care enabled us to have a healthy birth and give our first child, and we look back and say, no, that was God sustaining us. God sustaining us through those every ways. We remember finding out the transmission is slipping, the mechanic saying, sorry, your transmission is going to need to be done. We don't have money for a transmission. We don't. And we believe miraculously God allowed that transmission to last for months and months and months when it should have been gone because we believed it was one of the things that God was doing sustaining us. See, we live in a culture as America that is an abundant culture. We don't have very many of us that are in sustenance mode. For the most part, we are an abundant culture. A couple stories that I can remember that illustrates this is the first is when we went to South Africa, our first trip, we took 300 people years and years ago. We were doing some stuff, building into some kids. And I think at the end of that time, one of the groups said, let's have a pizza party for the kids. They went out and bought a bunch of pizza. Kids came through the line of pizza. At the end of the line, there was different sodas. It was like a Sprite, orange, a Coke product thing. And they said to the kids, what would you like to drink? And the little kids with their pizza looked at them and went, yes. Why did they say yes? Well, if they had the opportunity for it, they wanted it all. Secondly, they didn't know how to make a choice. If you have the ability to make a choice, you are in abundance. If you can choose, I want Sprite or I want Coke, you're abundance. If you can choose what clothes I want to wear, what clothes I want to buy, where I want to go to school, if you can choose what entertainment option I'm going to take advantage of, those are all things that are blessings afforded to us by abundance that the rest of the world doesn't have that opportunity. The other example is a more recent one. About a couple months ago, we had some pastors from around the world who came to Crossroads for the weekend to learn. They came and did our pre-meeting. We did a full run-through on Saturday to an empty room, and they came to the debrief where we then critiqued it, and people were trying to make everything better. They came to just how things were operating in all the different campuses. They went to all the different campuses, and they were from Denmark, Scotland, England, and a bunch of places around the United States. They all came here at their own expense and all that stuff. After Saturday night, the last service on Saturday night, we took them out to a steakhouse. When I say we, I mean we took them out to a steakhouse. It's called an expense account that I have that all of us are giving. I able to have that expense account. So we went to the steakhouse, and it was really, I mean, these folks are, I mean, it's the largest church in Denmark, the largest church in Scotland, which it's not that large by American standards, like 1,500, 1,000 people, but nonetheless, massive for that cultural context. And those folks, they say, every time we come to America, we're blown away by the food. This big old slab of meat comes plopping out. They're like, my goodness. They said, that would do an entire family meal, just that one piece. And they're laughing. They're not complaining about it. They're not saying, oh, America. They're like, I love America. I love this country. You know, massive thing is there. And they say, you cannot, in our country, they said, find any place where you could have this quality in this size. It just does not exist. And we're numb to that in our country. The amount of things that we have, which I like, I'm thankful for. But the question for us, as we, for the most part, live in abundance, when's the last time you voluntarily went into sustenance so somebody had a shot at abundance? When's the last time you voluntarily went without so somebody could possibly have? Closer you are to God, the more regular this happens in your life. It becomes a normal part of your existence. The book of Psalm chapter 54, verse 6 says this, with a free will offering I will sacrifice to you. I will give thanks to your name, O Lord, for it is good. We're going to have the opportunity for a free will offering. You, in and of your own will, say, I'm going to go without McDonald's to have somebody have an education. I'm going to go without, you know, Kroger prepackaged meals to allow somebody else to have a meal every day ongoing. It's a sacrifice. That's what sacrifice is. It doesn't necessarily have to hurt. It just means I could have this, and I'm not going to have that. I'm going to offer up to the Lord because I'm telling God, thank you, you're good, because the very fact that I'm able to make a tweak and adjustment means that I'm in abundance and you're good. You are just good, and I give that offering as a result. To voluntarily do it is an amazing thing. What's not amazing is when you're forced to do it, but even when you're forced to do it, there's benefits of it. In the recent financial meltdown we've had, one of the big players that is no more, Lehman Brothers, their former CFO, talks about this in a recent New York Times article about how her life was changed when a certain level of abundance was taken away from her. Here's what she says. Without the crisis, I may never have been strong enough to step away. Perhaps I needed what felt at the time like some of the worst experiences in my life to come to a place where I could be grateful for the life I had. I had to learn to begin to appreciate what was left. So she appreciated abundance because she went into a mode of sustenance. It's interesting how sustenance and abundance works out really well together. You don't appreciate abundance until you go through sustenance. And at the same time, you can't endure sustenance unless you believe in abundance. If you just stay in one or the other and aren't aware of the other realm, they don't play well with each other. Let me say it again. You can't appreciate abundance until you step into sustenance, which we're going to do this week, and you can't endure sustenance unless you believe that there's abundance that you're waiting for. The nation of Israel was going to the promised land. It wasn't like this the rest of our life, just eating flaky substance or quail at night. They knew there was a matter of time until they went into abundance. Prophet Nehemiah, one of the heroes and great leaders of the Old Testament,
look back on what his comrades had done generations before he lived and how they had been spiritually formed. We're all going to be spiritually formed as we do this. And he looked back at how the nation of Israel was spiritually formed, and he recounted how it was good for everyone, for them to voluntarily go into sustenance. Here's what Prophet Nehemiah says. You gave your good spirit to instruct them and did not withhold your manna from their mouth and gave them water for their thirst. 40 years you sustained them in the wilderness and they lacked nothing. Their clothes did not wear out and their feet did not swell. So some of the miracles that happened for them is they never went threadbare. Not only did they have enough nutrition, but their shoes never wore out. Their feet never grew, so they wouldn't have to upgrade their shoes. They were in sustenance mode. And hey, if I believe that God can do a miracle like part a sea, if I believe that God can do a miracle like heal somebody, I believe and I've experienced God can do a miracle like have my transmission go longer than it should have gone. When you're in a times of sustenance and you see God show up, your faith grows. It escalates. What they were doing is they were basically working the five capitals that Chuck talked about last week. I mean, financially, they were in sustenance mode, but spiritually, as a result of miracles, they were in growth mode. Let me do a little recap of what Chuck did last week. It was really, really good. The five things that all of us can work, the five capitals that all of us can shift resources around in. The first is financial. It's not the first because it's the most important. It's the first because it's easiest. I mean, really, if you look at how much money we've earned in our lifetimes, you'd be shocked at the amount of money that's come through our accounts. Millions for many of us, but not there right now. But nonetheless, money just comes around. The next one, intellectual. And I'm going to misspell things because let me tell you, it is hard to talk and spell at the same time in front of people. So someone's like, you spelled capitalism wrong. Yes, I know. Try doing it sometime. It's hard. So intellectual. Financial. Then if you don't have intellectual capital, you're going to lose all your financial capital unless your parents set up trust for you and they allow you to be stupid and still have money. I know a lot of people who are like this. Seriously, it works this way. I know many in the real world, you know. If you know how to make money, but you're not going to be able to keep it. The next one up is physical. You can have money and you can have smarts, but if you don't have physical health, these two things do not matter. In fact, you want to do everything you can to put these suckers into physical. Steve Jobs, basically his authorized biography, he commissioned the work in essence. When you read that book, he had all the money in the world, he had a lot of smarts, but he didn't have physical, he died. And actually, he wasn't as smart as you thought that he was. Because if you read that book, he should still be alive today. There was intellectual capital that doctors and physicians and nutritionists gave him years before he died. He said, no, you don't know what you're talking about. And that's why he's dead. He would still be alive today if he was drawing it. And the next one is relational. Relational. This is why, you know, all of a sudden we feel lonely. We've got all the money in the world. We're feeling good. And we hit relational. And you can put these to make this happen. I mean, as a friend, I've been bought as a friend. You can buy me as a friend. I'm not cheap. But you can buy me as a friend. And Jesus talked about that in that passage we looked at the last couple weeks. But then what happens is if you don't go to the final level, spiritual, this is where your life gets constantly, you go through the motions, spirals. You keep climbing the ladder and because it just never satisfies. It just never, until you realize, no, this is ultimately what I need. I need spiritual cap. I need a relationship with Jesus. And what we do with these is we shift these around to come to times of abundance. Abundance, where we have resources to meet our needs and our wants. Meet our needs and our wants, and we want to meet other people's needs and build into them. Nehemiah, he continues explaining what happened in the nation of Israel. He says, you gave them kingdoms and peoples and allotted to them every corner. You multiplied their children as the stars of heaven. And they captured fortified cities and a rich land. And you took possessions of houses full of all good things, cisterns already hewn, vineyards, olive orchards, and fruit trees in abundance. So they ate and were filled and became fat and delighted themselves in your great goodness. So the nation of Israel goes from sustenance, and now they're in abundance. And this basically describes us today. We live in a country where Cisterns were already hewn. We didn't lay the water pipes. So we turn on, boom, they're there. We live in a country right now where we have all kinds of high-class taste that vineyards produce. God is okay for you to spend money on alcohol, assuming you're not addicted to it and it's not in your family. He's okay for us to have olive orchards, fruit trees in abundance. In fact, the nation of Israel came out and they got overweight. There's a reason why the nation of America is the most overweight nation in the history of the world. You can't be overweight unless you have extra resources. It's not possible. You know, we say, I don't have money. No, we have resources. And he says that God supernaturally helped them in times of sustenance and supernaturally brings them into times of abundance. I want to help us assess where we are right now in relationship to God and in relationship to money. This is your own little self-diagnosis you can do. I'm going to make a little X and Y axes here. Now, which one is this one? This is the Y. Why? I don't know. It's the y-axis. So let's say you're on the top end of this axis. We'll say you are someone who trusts God. Trust God. The other extreme, an atheist, trust self. No need to trust in God, just trust in self. So all of us fall somewhere on this continuum. Then over on this one, we'll call this side, in our relationship to money, money is a tool. That's what money is, a tool. It's something I can use. Or over here, on the opposite, you are a tool of money. You tool. You are a tool of money. So based on where you are and being able to tell money what to do or money telling you what to do or being able to trust God or only trusting yourself, this kind of puts you into one of these quadrants. Some of these I looked at the first week. This one down here, if you're someone who trusts in yourself, your own abilities, and you really are really good at budgets, you're really good at telling money what to do, and you're able to control money, I called you the first week a capitalist. I'm spelling it wrong. I know I am. Sorry. Whatever. Don't judge me. Capitalist. And I like capitalism. If I'm going to live in a country where there's an economic system, I think it's the best economic system going, but America's capitalism has certainly got some parts that are broken, some parts that are being abused, and all that. So I'm not trying to defend or promote this, but I do notice this. The people who get a little like difficult, why critiquing our capitalist system, this is where they are. Because if you're more excited about capitalism than God, you have a problem spiritually. I'm fine. But anyway, you're capitalist here. So this is probably where you are. And then I said, if you trust in yourself and you're a tool of money, you're a fatalist. I don't know. I'm just not the kind of person who can manage a budget. Oh, I don't. It's just, I don't know how it happened. I'm just the way I am. You know, if you feel like you're not going to be able to get traction, you're down here, even though whatever you say about God, what you say, it's a fatalist. Then right here, trust in God, but your tool of money, idealist. You know, this is chum for televangelists right here. You just trust in God, and everything's going to go okay for you financially. No, it's not. Yes, you trust in God, and God also tells you, trust me and do my principles. Okay, so an idealist is what they're on. Now, over here, if you're trusting God and recognizing Jesus talks more about money than any other thing, and you're using it for the things that God is about, his family business, making things happen, you become an activist. And this is where God wants everyone to be. God does not give us money only so we have a nice life. He gives us money because he disperses his resources into his family to push forward the family business of changing the world. And if you can't identify how the money he has given you is actually changing things, you're not over in this place, and this is where he wants to get you. That's where I want to get you this week, because the message I give you right now is nothing compared to the impact that could happen to you spiritually if you actually tried this for a week. If you tried it for a week. Now, let's help us be a bit honest, because I know I tend to be self-deluded, and I could look at something and say, oh, yeah, absolutely. I'm here. I would say I'm here, but I'm probably thinking I'm here. you know. And so I thought we took a survey, probably all of us, yeah, well, maybe I'm here, maybe. Just get some questions for your own edification, your discussion. These are discernment questions on where to appropriately put yourself. So first, let's talk about this axis right here. Four questions for you. Number one, do you perceive your major problems to be financial in nature? Do you think that that's the solution to all your problems? If so, you're probably closer over to here. Someone told me a while ago, and the more I've thought about it, the more true I believe it is. If the only problems you have can be solved by money, then you have no problems. It's true. You meet somebody who has money and has a disease that can't be cured, you realize, oh no, you have a problem. You meet somebody else, it's true. But if you think that the solution to your problems is money, that says something. Number two, does your financial minimum need keep rising? What you think that you need, has it kept rising over the years? I remember my first paycheck job after I delivered papers, I was flipping burgers at Hardee's, and my first paycheck was $310 or something like that. And I said, oh my goodness, $310! Oh my goodness, spend this all. This is awesomeness, awesome. And then I get my first job out of college, working at a church doing student ministry, and my first paycheck was, I think it was $621, something like that. $621? Are you kidding me? I'm, oh man, how am I going to sign off? I'll go get a car loan. That's what I'm going to do right now. And that was the beginning of my stupid financial decisions. But I was always amazed, and I always thought, there's no way. I don't know what I would do with any more money. The old church that I was a part of, we used to, there was budget meetings. It was a normal churchy thing. There was budget meetings, and you'd be able to come and see what's happening with the budget and vote on it and see what everybody makes and all that kind of stuff. And they were really weird. I mean, it was really weird. Like, people would never come to prayer meetings, but they come to budget meetings. That's weird. That's a sign, honestly. And they come in, and the people get all worked up about that. And in this context, you could see, because they were voting on every line item in the budget, you could see what everybody else was making on staff with you. I was making, I think I was $16,000 or something like that. And I saw there was this guy on staff who made $29,000. I went, you gotta be freaking kidding me. $29,000? What would you ever do with $29,000? I start fantasizing. What would I do if I had $13,000 more? I have no idea what I would do. And of course, I'm beyond $29,000 right now. Not as far beyond as the rumors say that I am. Man, I wish I made what the rumors tell me. And I'll tell you why we don't publish individual salaries around here. First of all, it makes for a very dysfunctional work environment. And secondly, it just does weird stuff. Like, let's trust right now. Turn to somebody you don't know right now and tell them how much you make. No one's doing this right now. Why are you not doing it? That actually ties into number three. Do other people's standards and means define your financial contentment? When you see something somebody else has or somebody else has, that defined how good you feel about yourself? Do you feel about worse about yourself when you're somebody who has things you don't? Do you feel better about yourself when you're around somebody who can have the things that you have? Number four, and last one on this axis, do I give and save according to preset percentage base or momentary impulse? Hey, when Red Cross has some campaign saying text this number and give $10, whatever, wonderful, do that. That's not how you grow spiritually, though. That's not how you grow in the capital. That's not how you make an investment. You soberly and spiritually make a decision, what is my minimum preset percentage this year that I'm going to? And until you're doing that, you're further this way than you actually think that you are. Is there a preset base percentage of giving and saving that I do? Okay, let's talk about trust. Let's talk about this accent. Number one, would you be more devastated if you went online right now and you found out you had no money, or you went online and found out there was no God? So you go online, and you know, all of a sudden you're doing your stuff online, which I do our financial stuff online. You find out some weird things happen. FDIC is shut down. Your money's been sucked out of your account, and you have no money. Would that freak you out more? Or if in that same session you stumbled across something on CNN, you found out there was irrefutable empirical proof that God does not exist. Which of those two things would actually rock your world more? That tells us something. Number two, Where or what is your thankfulness directed towards? When something happens that's good, is your thankfulness directed? Man, I'm glad I got that job. Is it, man, I'm glad I worked the 60 hours a week. Boy, am I glad that I got myself a... Do you immediately think that, or you think, man, am I glad that I was born into a country where I could have this? Man, am I glad that I was born with a mind that enables me to crunch numbers? Man, am I glad that as a salesman, I was born with a personality that has a high BS index and makes people buy stuff they don't... Man, am I glad... I mean, do you immediately go towards things you did or opportunities? Because guess what? Whatever you have right now, if you're born in South Africa, you wouldn't have it. Amazes me how prideful we are, but my own, you hit the lucky sperm club. You got born in a place where you actually had a shot. You've got born any other number of places around the world, you wouldn't have had a shot. You just wouldn't. You trust in God, you see those things. Number three, does your money management differ from someone who is like you and doesn't trust God? So someone who makes about the same money you have, who is in the same neighborhood or whatever, can you see discernible different ways that you manage money from somebody who's an atheist? Fourth and final, is it hard to give money away? You know, because the thing that we trust in, we can never give away. We just can't do that. That's why giving is always an entryway into spiritual growth. That's why Jesus, and it's through the scriptures over and over, you cannot give away what you trust in. And one of the ways that you ensure you're not trusting in it is you release it. Is giving, strategic, generous, intense giving, difficult for you? Deuteronomy chapter 26, 8 to 10. And the Lord brought us out of Egypt with a mighty hand and an outstretched arm, and with great deeds of terror, with signs and wonders. And he brought us into this place and gave us this land, a land flowing with milk and honey. And behold, now I bring the first of the fruit of the ground, which you, O Lord, have given me. This is called the giving of the first fruits. You know, you would have a seed, a farmer would say, who made this seed? Not me. You put the seed, you put it in the ground. Who made that ground? Not me. All of a sudden, it's kind of pop up. Who made that grow? Not me. Environmental conditions were created by God. And so the first thing that cements to me that I trust in God and this is from God, the first thing I do is I give. And though very few of us, if any of us, are farmers, our personalities, our intellect, our educational backgrounds, the families we've been born in, the country that we have a shot in, all of these things were not created by us. All of these things could be traced back to God. And so when I give something away, I trust on. Money didn't give me the opportunities I have. Money didn't give me the opportunity to be the pastor at Crossroads and other people who were more qualified and better than me, obviously. Money didn't give me the opportunity to actually make a great spousal selection, not knowing what the heck I was doing. I just got fortunate when I wasn't making the right decision, but I made that one right. So God did those things for me. Money doesn't do those things. God does those things for me. What's it going to be like for us to come to a place where we say, God's enough. What he's given me right now is at least it's enough for a week. It's enough for a week as I build into somebody else and invest in something that's going to have long-term satisfying impact. Andrew's going to come out in the band right now. We're going to do a song that's it's always one that rattles around in my mind when money comes to my mind. Because it tells me that God's given me enough. Just like God gave the nation of Israel enough manna, and then he gave them more than enough as they came into the promised land, so also God is giving all of us enough here right now, because I'm pretty sure none of us are going to die of starvation anytime soon. He's given us enough, and that's not to make us feel guilty at all. No guilt-driven thing about this at all. This is a gratitude and attitude of gratitude exercise of looking what God's done for us and what we get to do. We don't have to do this. This could be the largest beans and rice fast that's ever happened voluntarily. It could be. You know, other churches are having a Holy Week this week. We're having a Holy Week service. It's going to be good. We're also having Fart Week. I mean, it is a pleasing aroma that's going to be going up to the Lord. It is. That's an actual Bible verse. It's a Bible verse. I didn't say that last service. I should have. Make sure I say that next service. That's what I got to make sure. So why don't we stand right now? Let's stand before I give you some final instructions. Let's stand. And God, as you hear these words from your people, may they please you. You are enough.